computers online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T minus 25 seconds.
Live stream for T120K.
T minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are go.
T minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This is your host, Leno Sanic. Today, we are speaking to Joachim Van Wing from Belgium, from Brussels.
Hi, Len.
So thankful to be speaking to you. You're one of the few people that I really look up to. You've been putting on a speakers conference, and this is the fourth annual one, and I wanted to really help promote it and let people know what's going on in Brussels. This is the fourth one, so you've done a few. You know how to be successful at it, and I was just the one last year, which was a huge success. I was just amazed on what you were able to pull off. You set up these very intellectual conferences where people come together, and then because it's labeled like a barbecue, there's a dinner. It's an all-day event. Last year, there was 6 presenters. And this year, I wanted to give you time to help promote it. And anyone in Europe that would be in the neighborhood of Brussels or willing to travel might be interested in how they can find out more information. So welcome. It's a pleasure to be speaking to you again.
The pleasure. Likewise, Len. Likewise. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So, yeah, this year, tell us what's happening.
Well, it's still an invitation-only event, and so everyone who receives an invitation to buy an entrance ticket should be on a list and should be qualified. But the fact that these people that we are getting through right now by listening to Black Op Radio, simply listening to Black Op Radio, should be that checks the box for being the right profile, the right kind of people we are looking for to attend the venue and the event. So that's we are always looking for new people to join our somewhat private barbecue. It's not an open event. You can't just order tickets online or in the open. It's invitation only. But as I said, people who are acquainted or listening to Black Op Radio are by definition the right sort of people and are more than welcome to join us in Brussels on July 27th. And as you said, it's a day-long event. We have a 5-course meal. We start with a very heavy English breakfast, then some neat appetizers and drinks. The main course, which will be a grill plate, a dessert, and by the end of the evening, we'll have another bread and butter and cheese course. And in between, we are all sitting at very long tables, eating together all day, having a drink. And once in a while, the conversations will need to be interrupted by one of the 4 speakers who gets the stage and will present one of the 4 topics. And so once again, what are the sort of speakers we've looked for this year, just like we did in previous years? These are people who have a very high level of expertise in their specific domain, and the domain and the subject that they bring should be a black or a gray spot in the mainstream media. So whoever has something very interesting and relevant to say but doesn't get airtime in the regular media or in the mainstream or old stream media, for these sort of people, we provide a podium and a platform. If you want, Len, I can go over the 4 speakers we booked this year.
Yes, I'm very much interested, because the fact that you had such a wonderful dinner and drinks all day long is just the side to it. So these speakers are what caught my attention.
Well, this year we have a repeat speaker who is Simon Michaud. He's an associate professor at GTK in Finland, which is the Geological Survey Institute for the Finnish government. He himself is an Australian mining engineer and expert in that domain. And for years, he's been studying the real figures behind the net zero and decarbonizing agenda, which is bound to change our everyday lives by electrifying whatever we can and abolish all fossil fuels, which we are not against. I mean, it's not such a bad idea, because fossil fuels will become harder to come by. They will get more expensive, and it'll be more difficult because of the places of origin where it needs to be mined and shipped to the Western industrialized world. And another reason is because the Western world had the playing field on its own and now needs to share the table with the BRICS and the Global South, who are bigger than the G7 by now. So last year, Simon Michaud did a presentation on the big volumes of raw materials, minerals, and energy we are going to need if we really want to get rid of fossil fuels and reduce it to only 8% of our total energy consumption, which is a mirage in itself. It's a chimera. But nonetheless, the EU and some other large and powerful bodies have decided to go that way, and the transition has been initiated. But that raises the question, where are we going to get all the raw materials from? And if these volumes are extractable in the first place? And when Simon did his, in the meantime, peer-reviewed studies and published them, when they were not peer-reviewed a year ago, they could be denied and just ignored. But today, his studies are peer-reviewed, and the conclusion is quite simple. Electrifying the world, or the Western world, with wind turbines and solar panels, even a hydrogen economy, is actually, it's never going to happen the way it is presented. So that's these figures, the basis were laid down last year by the presentation Simon did last year. This year, he's coming back not to propose or to explain the problem situation or all the problems around it, but this year he comes with possible solutions. So if this net zero ambition is physically unattainable, then if we still want to clean up the environment and become less dependent on fossil fuels, then which scenarios are realistic? And so this year he comes with solutions. What electrification, electricity production, hydrogen would look like, and what sort of grid we will need to build in the near and distant future, and also a grid, in a sense, not only the energy grid, but also a knowledge grid and an interconnected human grid of people who know things, who can get things done, who still can repair our mechanics and machinery, of which we have become so dependent because we automated everything. So our automations, what will they look like in 10, 15 years? How will we be able to maintain them at a low cost? And what sort of life automated, machine-assisted life quality will be realistic within the energy envelope as it is projected over the 10 years in front of us.
Very good, very good. I think I went out for lunch with him or had coffee, and he's very interesting. It's just a fantastic speaker choice.
A very clever, intelligent guy who brings his subject like no others. Is intriguing the way he pulls you into the matter and takes you by the hand and makes these large figures comprehensible, and the magnitude of them to let them sink in.
Yeah,
what we're really looking at.
What I was impressed by is these topics and a long form interview that you have. It's like it's something you never see on television, like on CNN or something, that you would think that's what people are hungry for. And here you are putting on a presentation of people. I think I know what you want to know about the future. I'm going to get some speakers of people who are really doing something, and it's not on the mainstream news.
And that's exactly why we have these sort of speakers on it, because they really do have the knowledge. They have something to say. What the things they've studied will be relevant in the next 12, 18, 24 months, and they don't get any airtime on the regular media. So that's why we give them a platform. And the second one, the second speaker who deserves a platform as well is Brecht Arnaert. Brecht Arnaert is a dear friend, personal friend of mine. He was actually the inspiration for doing the very first edition. He got in the midst of COVID in 21, when we had this very short penitentiary leave because we were like prisoners locked in our homes, and then for a few weeks we were allowed to get outdoors and see our friends again. And he put together the first speakers barbecue, to call it that way, and we came together with 30 people. We had the greatest time because we lost our freedom and we were locked up in our houses, and we hadn't seen our friends for months. And then we all got together and had a great barbecue with just a few intimate speakers, friends of the group, which Brecht was one of them. He was the organizer, but because by the time he comes on stage, I guess this summer, he will be a professor because he's writing his dissertation to become a PhD at the Madrid University of Economics in Madrid, Spain. So by this summer, I guess his dissertation should be ready and presented. So perhaps by the time he gets on stage, he will no longer be a DRS, as we call it, but a real doctor or professor. And he will speak about, he will explain why economy and macroeconomics cannot be a positivistic science. Science as we consider it, physics, chemics, biology. Still today, we handle the economic field as if it is built on the hardest observable figures, on empiric data, which is actually not the case. And Brecht Arnaert will get on stage and have an hour to explain why empiric data can never be the basis for economy or macroeconomics, but it should always be the interaction between people and the interaction, more importantly, based on the spoken word, the word between speaker and a listener. That's the cornerstone of the way man, people, our civilization, how we manage our wealth, our labor, and how we handle securities and insecurities.
Just fascinating stuff again.
He's a little bit renowned because in Belgium and the whole of Western Europe is rather left-wing or liberal, as you would call it in North America. And he's, let's say, a rather conservative right-wing economist, which is somewhat of an exception, has become somewhat of an exception. He knows economic history really well, and then we're talking not since the 20s or the 30s, but he knows economic history over ages, over the last 500 centuries, even two millennia, a bit like Michael Hudson, who goes back thousands of years when he looks at how wealth is created and how economic and monetary systems get built, function, saturate, and then demise.
Okay.
As a third speaker, he'll be the keynote speaker, and it's really an honor, I must say, to have him on. I never would have dreamt to hook him up and to be able to say this, as I'm going to say. We have Alistair MacLeod, and Alistair MacLeod is the world's foremost specialist and expert on silver and gold. He's the head of research of goldmoney.com. He has his proper Substack, which is doing really, really well. He has a lot of followers and subscribers. And I know my way around economics, and I'm reading and about it every single day. But even I, at the age of 50 years old, I needed someone like Alistair MacLeod to explain in the simplest way some of the fundamentals that I never really understood before. And it was only when Alistair MacLeod just pointed out certain aspects of money, of credit, of budgets, about and fiscal policies, on macroeconomics, and especially on the role of gold and silver and banking, that I really took a huge leap forward in really understanding how banking, financial world, and macroeconomics really work. So it's a real treat, and I am really honored, and also a wee bit proud to be able to announce someone like Alistair MacLeod. He's the keynote speaker of the venue. And then to end the day, we have the darling of the audience, actually. He's the sweetest guy around. His name is Professor Matthias de Smet, or as in America is pronounced, Matthias de Smet. He's a clinical psychologist, and he wrote a best-selling book on totalitarianism. This year he comes round again. He was a speaker 2 years ago in the midst of COVID, when his bestseller hit the market and opened the eyes of many people. He did a tour in the US. He did a lot of podcasts. His name should be, you could easily find his speeches on YouTube or wherever. I'll guess you put his name and the list in the show notes, so people can Google his name and go onto Google. This year he'll come over as a friend, as a personal friend as well, and he'll speak about stigma and propaganda.
Well, there's a lot of propaganda these days. It's unparalleled, the amount of crap that is thrown at us every day, and
the meaning of words is getting diluted and deflated, because something like, and it's thrown around so cheaply, words like anti-vax, fake news, extreme right, anti-government, climate denier, conspiracy theorists, all these terms and all this stigma are handed out by the mainstream media whenever some studies or findings do not deviate from the official narrative. The only argument, or the only argument that the mainstream media has left is calling out names like extremist, fascist, right wing, and so on. And this is just not only a sort of smearing of people or smearing dissenting views, but it's also dishonest, and it's also unwarranted stigma, which is hard to get rid of once you're labeled by the mainstream media. But then again, that's the only sort of it's the only means of discrediting other views and dissenting voices.
Yeah, in Canada, they're trying to label a lot of things hate speech.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Or you know, never mind if someone is homophobic or transphobic or all these other things that are coming into it. But just when they label you, that's hate speech. And in Canada, they're trying to bring forward a bill where you can be fined by a tribunal, not an official court, or where the laws are written and you can see if you've broken the law or not. It's very troubling. And there's a lot of little things that I used to be able to say as a joke. Now I don't even reply to people on Facebook or something that I would write down and smile, knowing that what I'm writing I don't really mean. I just a kind of a joke. I see you smiling too, right? But I don't want to write that stuff.
I am.
Yeah, because I sometimes I've even typed out something and then I just backspace. Okay, I better not send that. I'm going to get a 30-day ban. I could get banned. I have a couple of, you know, I don't need the headache. But yet now what's happening to society is people are having thoughts that they're not going to say out loud. And for instance, if you didn't like Trump, right? But when you see Hillary and so all these other voices there, you go, I hate them so much I'm going to vote for the other guy that I don't really like just to try to send a message. And then, you know, people, good Lord, if you're pro-Trump, people are freaking out. They're kind of missing in the language that people are saying, like there was an effort about none of the above, that people could finally, you know, have an election where they said, we don't want anyone. And I can't believe that in America, they're going to run Joe Biden. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Weekend at Bernie's, but it's a... I feel sorry for Biden because he's just too old for that job and he's not quite with it. You know, there are other alternatives like Robert Kennedy Jr. is running as an independent and there's some other people. But yeah, it looks like...
I always thought that Ron Paul is the greatest missed chance for America and the world. Him not being elected in, when was it, 2008, 2012... Yeah, he would have made a great president, Ron Paul, a libertarian.
Yeah,
I think it's
a smart man. I mean, you just want someone there, smart, where you might not agree with everything. You know, some of my close friends don't agree with me on some things. You know, and but I really hang on to. It's too easy to say, okay, we're not friends anymore. So I make a real effort to say, okay, I don't agree with you on that. How can I politely handle this, right?
I got unfriended by a few people who I thought were dear friends just for posting on Facebook something like 5 years ago that the mere fact and the historical truth and fact and observation that Trump was the first president, I believe, since Coolidge, that didn't get America in a new war during his presidency. So simply the observance of Trump being a president who didn't start a war and him being the only one for not doing that for the past 100 years was enough for people to unfriend me or to get out of touch.
Yeah. And someone close to you, like me, I would say, good for you. Because those people, that's the thing, that the event that pulled the curtain back. They weren't really your friends. Your friends should say, and this is my view, you know, I disagree with you on that point, but I'm not going to end a friendship over it. But I just disagree. Yeah, I lost a couple of people who were all freaked out. And even I've had a few Facebook squabbles with people where I try to point out, I said, every day you're posting something about Trump. But you should spend that effort on running someone who is better against him. So all you're doing is saying Trump is a clown, Trump is a clown. And meanwhile, he's going to win in a landslide. And they're very mad, you know. So I said, why don't you find a candidate or promote another candidate with the same vigor that you attack Trump with? Just, you know, but, you know, my point of view was not everyone's. So I can't believe why the whole world doesn't think like me, but they don't.
Well, but it seems like the U.S. is in a real pickle or really has a problem because the two candidates are both suboptimal and highly toxic to the other side. But if you look at European politics, it's just the same. We have perhaps more political parties who take part in the elections, but all these pseudo options and choices are all suboptimal. In the same way, and it's not because you can choose between 9 suboptimal political parties that it should be a better system than a 2-party system, which provides 2 suboptimal choices. So we all have a political and democratic deficit in that regard, and we all, I mean, the Western world, who claims to be democratic.
Well, I was at your last speaker's barbecue in 2023, right? Correct?
Yes, yeah, you were. Right, I will never forget it.
Okay, wonderful. No, because for a second there, I thought, geez, was it 2022? You know, with this couple of years of COVID, time has kind of slid. You know, I'm unclear. Was that 5 years ago or just a year ago? You know, but I guess I forgot that it was invitation only. So if someone who's listening to this interview right now really thought, well, I live near Brussels, is there a way they could email you or
Yes, Okay. Yes, they can. So the email address is info@energia.be, but you will put it in the show notes.
Sure. Yes.
And as I said, whoever listens to Black Op Radio is more than welcome, because simply for listening qualifies you as being the right sort of people and the right profile of the people we want to attract and have. We invite you to join the venue. More than welcome.
Very good, very good. It's very large. It's grown to hundreds of people there, and I can't say enough good things about it. But what impressed me was just your ability to pull off an idea. You go, I'm so tired of not hearing the people I want to hear. I'll do it myself. I'll invite them. And tell us about maybe the previous years. I know you had a few people that were there. I'm thinking of a couple of doctors anyway, when people were talking about COVID. And now COVID is in the news where they're saying the shots are, cancer is up 300% from them, or even higher. And the facts and the figures are coming out redacted, and there's going to be a backlash to the medical community for just going along with something that they just said it's safe and effective when it wasn't.
The backlash is already there, Len. You can see it in the figures. There is a statistical over mortality for months and years now, and it's really significant. But 2 years ago, when COVID was really the single topic on the agenda, we had Dr. Robert Malone flown over from the States.
That's who I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, because he's you can say or think of him what you want, but still he holds a lot of patents that put a groundwork on a technology which still holds a lot of possibilities and might someday also be used for the good. And he was the technician, let's say. He's a medical doctor, but he was he's the technician who, as a first, managed to produce large amounts of stabilized mRNA. And the patents he applied for are all in that regard, and he was at the cradle of mRNA technology, and all the speakers we had in 2022 were all on COVID, and everything they said at that time was a, let's say, somewhat dissident and was not mainstream at all, because it went against the official narrative. But everything that was said that year in 22, we had Geert van den Bos. Geert van den Bossen is a virologist and a PhD who worked in the vaccine industry, and he's been critical from day one on the way about the way the pandemic. Or it's actually an epidemic, has been handled. We also had Dr. Marc Watelet and many others who are real experts on the subject. And every single word that they said more than 2 years ago all came through, I'm sorry to say. Because it's not that we wanted to be right. We would have loved to be wrong across the board and the whole way, because that would have meant that these injections actually would have resulted in a positive, in a beneficial saldo. And we see the inverse, we see the opposite. The injections have been detrimental and have only have had negative effects on the broad health of people and of society as a whole.
And what's interested me is the mandate, the mandatory function that at least here in Canada it had, you know, that it culminated with one group, truckers, finally saying enough is enough. The idea of government is to organize, but this is draconian and we've had enough. In Europe, I watch with glee some of these farmers protesting their parliament, where they have these trucks of manure and they just went up to the parliament buildings and sprayed them, right? You know, so the thing is, governments are not listening to the people, and the people are saying, if you're telling us we have to have these, prove it. Prove us, show something. And then, you know, when Pfizer says, our documents are going to be sealed for 75 years. You mean right then and there, you bring out the torches and pitchforks, you know?
It's like a Warren report.
Yeah, yeah, exactly the same. We don't want anyone to be alive when we reveal what really happened.
You know what? Just publish it. People don't read anyway.
Yeah, that's
what some of us do. Yeah. But some of us do.
Yeah. Well, I'm so thrilled that you're putting on another speaker's barbecue, which, first of all, it was a first-class event, and I'm just so happy to promote something that I felt like, because I don't see many things that really inspire me and go, you know, that was fantastic, this is good, this guy's doing good work, even if it's something else. Like, for instance, if I see Oliver Stone put out a documentary or something like that, like, he had one on nuclear power, right? And he did his 4 hours on Destiny Betrayed. Like, you know, he made the movie 30 years ago. Now we know so much more. Here's what we know. With your speakers, I was talking to you just before that about last year you had a speaker that was working for the Venus Project.
And that was Simon.
Right.
Simon Michaud, who will return this year.
Right, but for those who aren't familiar with it, it was something put together by Jacques Fresco, right, and his wife Roxanne Meadows. This was, you know, hey, we're going to lead our civilization forward. What does that entail? Well, here are some of my ideas, right? And the thing I like about your speakers where you're talking about health or economics or anything else is that let's just have an open discussion. It doesn't even have to be debate, but here's the discussion. And here, when people present their ideas, then you get to say, well, I agree with that idea. You know what? I agree with half of it. I'll meet you halfway on that idea. And that was just something, you know, other than lately, you know, in the last couple of years that you hear from, I like Jimmy Dore or Joe Rogan, even Tucker Carlson, which totally surprised me. I was just in principle ready to dislike him. And when he started having his new show and then he went and some of his long form interviews are just, you know, and he has a laugh that's kind of disarming. It doesn't sound like a university professor or something like that. It sounds like a little kid having fun when he laughs, right?
Yep.
And so I go, you know, I laugh like that sometimes. So I'm just so pleasantly surprised that he was in the belly of the beast in mainstream media. And he said, no, there's something really wrong here and I'm going to do my own. Because I never listened to Fox. People said he was doing good work at Fox, but I just kind of, again, out of principle, I never listened to Fox. And the best thing that ever happened to me was we had CNN on, but we got a different cable package in our house 5 years ago or so, and then CNN wasn't included. I stopped watching it, and I started thinking, you know what, just having that on in the background, it kind of shaped a little bit. Now that I didn't hear it, I realized, you know, how one-sided it was and full of crap. And
I still listen to the mainstream media. I restrict it only to the national radio broadcasting in Belgium, and not because I'm interested I find their insights so revealing, but I need to do that simply to stay in touch with the delusions and with the strange ideas. Lots
the
of
level
people
of
are,
propaganda.
Yeah, but yeah, because if I'm at the sports club or at a bar and people are telling me the strangest sort of things, one might think these people are crazy, but they are just repeating what the mainstream media told them to. And and to not to become insane and simply to know where these people got their strange ideas from. That's the reason I still listen to the mainstream media and to the national broadcasting company in Belgium, to know what sort of disinformation they are spewing out every day and how they form the strange ideas in the minds of all the people around me who take it for granted and consider it as relevant news.
Now, since you have done these fantastic interviews, and this is your fourth year, some of the other ones, these guests like Robert Malone or other people, is there somewhere where people can still get a hold of these, view them? Are they recorded?
Yes, they are online. They are on Rumble. Some are on BitChute. Some are on YouTube. But I'll lend you a hand, and I'll send over all the links for you to copy paste into the show notes.
Oh, that's fantastic! That's fantastic. Yeah. Because at least some of these great interviews, and like I say, you know, I'm not telling people to take my point of view or your point of view. We're saying let's listen to both sides of a topic.
Yeah, and, but Len, it's not even about. I'm sorry to interrupt and to correct you in a way. It's not about agreeing on things. The facts are simply the facts, and lots of those subject matters are highly technical, like the Kennedy murder, like so many other dossiers. It's a highly technical subject. You need to know the subject matter. You need to study. You need to know the facts. The only thing we can disagree about is about the weight and the relevance of certain facts. And it's not about my opinion. It's not about your opinion. It's how things are and how the world works. And having and discussing and having opinions is all fine and dandy, and it's very entertaining when we're having a beer and we can disagree, but you can't disagree on the facts. So if Cyril Wecht finds out that the hard copies of the photographs of the Kennedy body are manipulated and are redacted and so on, it's not a matter of opinion. It's an established fact. We don't need to discuss those. We can discuss who did it, why did they do it, why did it stay disclosed, and so on and so on. That we can argue or have an argument about or have a discussion, but not about established facts. And yeah, okay, you catch my drift.
Yeah, I sure do, and you know, I stand corrected, but there's always if I have bought into the propaganda, it takes a certain time where I have to change my mind, and the debate, the discussion happened. Like I'll say about Tucker Carlson, when he was on Crossfire for years and he wore that little bow tie. I mean, I just hated the guy, whatever. So you have to present, like you say, certain facts. And then I slowly change my mind. I can't think of something where I just change my mind at the drop of a hat. You know, I kind of went, that goes against everything I've been thinking about, you know. Or, you know, even I would be interested in listening to something about cryptocurrencies. To me, I just can't understand how these made-up numbers people would put their hard-earned income into a cryptocurrency. But yet, the U.S. dollar, there's going to be some reckoning very soon. I mean, I belong to a couple of news groups that send out emails, and they say China is dumping U.S. Treasury bonds. They're just dumping U.S. dollars, and they're doing it. People are not noticing. And it won't be too long before the petrodollar, the U.S. dollar, is going to collapse.
We could fill a whole show on that, because that's exactly what I am writing about every week on my subject, on my Substack page. It's all about the BRICS. It's all about commodities and so on. That's right into, how do you say, right into my alley. This year, we don't have a specific speaker on that subject, on the decline of the dollar as a reserve currency or a trade currency. But then again, Alistair MacLeod, when he speaks about gold, he'll tell you that the BRICS countries like India and China, they are not de-dollarizing. They are just buying gold. But what do they buy it with? They buy it with their foreign exchange reserves, and these are denominated in dollars. So indirectly, they are de-dollarizing simply by buying gold. And as you say, as you mentioned correctly, the dollar is petrodollar cycle is already coming to a halt, simply because all the members of BRICS 11 are, almost all of them are OPEC members, and they no longer trade in their oil amongst one another in dollars. They do it in their own currencies. And they have built a system and an alternative for the SWIFT payment system. They have built an alternative for the IMF. They have built their own alternative for the World Bank. They have built their own alternative for the Federal Reserve. So they don't need those Western and Washington controlled institutes to simply conduct world trade. So they can do it outside of the dollar. And the main point, and every analyst will say the same, so I will do too. The main reason they are de-dollarizing is, of course, they've seen what the US can do with Russia. If a nuclear hyperpower like Russia, if their $300 billion of foreign exchange reserves can be confiscated, stolen, then what chance does a small country like Namibia, Zambia, Chile, Ecuador, Laos, Vietnam, what chance do they stand whenever their agenda is not to the liking of Washington? So if Washington can do that to a nuclear power like Russia, then they can do it to the rest of the world. And that's a signal for all these other small countries, the global south, let's say 85% of all the resources in the world and the world's population are in the global south. And this is a signal for these countries to start de-dollarizing and to conduct trade outside the dollar as much as possible, and to only do in dollars what is really needed, but to reduce it to a bare minimum. And the US, the dollar, and the Treasury, and Yellen, they will start feeling that, and so will be the American taxpayer in a short while.
Yeah, I'm getting reports from people who have been visiting America just how the tent cities that are overwhelming. The city is falling apart, and they're just allowing people. They're calling them illegal immigrants, alien, you know, immigration, and it's just almost beyond scope when you hear of the millions and millions of the people that are coming in. And you go, this has to be by design. Like they're betting on the collapse. I don't know.
Yeah. That's something that we in Western Europe, we do have a lot of immigration as well. But I don't think if it's that problematic as it is to the U.S.
That's another topic. Let's stick to your the fourth annual speakers barbecue, which sounds like a success. First of all, like you mentioned a couple of times, just about people who are listening to Black Op Radio, or you know, the right people, and I was thinking, oh, how do I take that? But it's an intellectual audience that is there to really learn something for a day. It's a day experience. It's good food and drinks and very good company, and it was well organized, and I just can't say enough about it. And yourself, you know, for putting it on. I mean, so many people talk the talk, but you're walking the walk. So
it's therapeutic, Len. I do it to feel better, to do something, because I get annoyed by whatever the mainstream media is spewing out every day, and I just want to rectify just a little bit.
Yeah, level the playing field.
Just one day. About the highly knowledgeable and intellectual guests that we have, we don't actually. Some of them really are intellectual.
No, I meant the audience.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. So the audience, some of them are really intellectual and are highly qualified. They all have their own domain of expertise, but we have all sort of people. We have high rollers and people who are heavenly and knowledgeably invested in the markets and so on. But we also have people who are genuinely dismayed about where this world is going and where it's heading, and the disinformation they are inundated by every single day. And so we have this very broad scala, let's say, lots of...
I know what you're trying to say, and I think people have picked up on that, that it's just, it's very interesting guests, and people have trusted you with your intuition that here is something worth listening to. I have put together these people, and people are returning. You get a lot of return people. So, and I hope maybe to attract a few people that would send you an email and
that
ask
would be great,
to be on the
that
list.
Would be great to have some foreign guests from all over the world or in Europe if they feel like traveling to the outskirts of Brussels for a whole day event. They are more than welcome.
Tell me the date again and where we can find more information.
July 27th at the outskirts of Brussels. And everything is on energia.be, but we'll put it in the show notes. Energia.be. That's the event website.
Is it
the event website?
Sure. Is it the same location as last year?
It is, but I hope it isn't. It's the same location, but last year we had such a dreadful weather that we needed to take refuge in the warehouse of the farm where we hosted it. And so if the weather allows it, like it should at midsummer, because July is midsummer in Europe, then we should be in the sun, in the meadows, on the prairie, green grass under our feet, and hopefully sitting in the shade of the trees on the little hills in the meadows.
Yeah, I think you said in a previous conferences some of them were outdoors. So
yeah, it's all outdoors. Yeah. But last year, luckily, we had this huge hangar that we could escape to because it was the coldest 6th of August recorded ever. It was really cold and rainy, and so we were lucky to have a plan B.
Okay, very good. Well, I think we've pretty well covered what we need to do for today. It's by invitation, but you could ask for an invitation by sending Joachim an email and making a case of why you're interested. But I think, like you said, anyone listening to Black Op Radio is to a certain level of they got an interest in the world around them. And one thing maybe you might want to mention just about some of the speakers were speaking in Dutch.
Yeah, this year we have two Dutch-speaking speakers and two will do their presentation in English. So Simon and Alistair will speak in English and Brecht and Matthias will speak Dutch. But then again, everyone in Flanders, which is a northern part of Belgium, we all speak English. So wherever you come from, everyone around you, all the people you will meet that day, all the other guests, they are all really proficient in English or French even. Of course, also Dutch, which is our native language.
Yeah, very good. I just wanted to mention that just because even on your archive, some of your videos, the guest speakers were speaking in Dutch. So,
yep.
Okay. Well, saying that, is there anything you would like to bring up about your speaker's barbecue that I didn't get to yet before we wrap up?
Maybe just the very first thing you started with. You called me somewhat of a hero and you congratulated me for doing that. But the reason I brought you to Belgium last year is because you are one of my heroes. So what you're doing every week is what I do once a year. So... that's why I really still appreciate to have you on the stage last year. And my wife told me, Joachim, be careful, never meet your heroes. But I'm so glad to have met you and that you made it to Belgium. And we spent a great week together. And we really, and so did my children, my kids, enjoyed your company for a week. So I hope to see you again alive and kicking as a dear friend once again then.
Well, thank you so much, and I reciprocate that by saying you come to Vancouver with your wife and family or whoever, and I would be glad to repay the hospitality. But you know, I guess there is a little truth to that. Be careful about meeting your heroes, because I've met one or two people that I did look up to and then I walked away thinking, what the hell was that, you know? But it's good that we just got along. But honestly, I was so impressed that you pulled off what you're doing. And so you say to me, okay, well, Len, you're still doing Black Op Radio. Fair enough. But some things we do, as like Fletcher Prouty used to tell me, to level the playing field. You know, maybe not to win the whole world over, but to say, hey, there's another side to this story. And, you know,
you've built an archive for the ages. And so the legacy of Black Op Radio and the archive and all the content that you have gathered and centralized is something that scholars in the future will write dissertations about. So
yeah,
congratulations.
You know, this is my hard to imagine, my 25th season. But when I was doing my 1,000th show, I thought, well, I'll make a list of all the people. And over 50 people had passed away already.
Yep.
You know, the Mark Lanes, the John Judges, the Fletcher Prouty, I just can't name them all. But so this was just last week, show 1,200. So my 1,200th show.
Time
and
flies,
saying
then.
That, Cyril Weck had just passed away too.
Yep. So he will be missed.
These aren't. But I offer my congratulations to you and your family for pulling this off. It was more than a one-man show. I saw the whole family pitch in.
Yeah, and it's we are depending on 20, 25 volunteers who working as hard as they can for 2-3 straight days. So it's not a one-man show. It's not me doing it. I have an army of like-minded, enthusiastic volunteers who bring all the sweat and tears we need to pull this off every year. So once again, also my thanks to those people.
Okay, Joachim Van Wing, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and we'll keep in touch, and good luck, not that you need it, but good luck maybe on the weather.
Let's hope for better weather than last year, and thank you so much, Len, for promoting the event on your radio channel.
Well, I just want to tell everyone how worthwhile it is. You know, so first of all, maybe when you read these show notes, look, and you can see some of the previous guests and some of the other interviews you have done with people, like, for instance, like a Robert Malone, right? Or, I mean, I'd be interested in listening this year to the Gold and Silver. I mean, I follow it all the time, and I wonder, I'm not going to buy crypto, but should I put my money in gold? You know, like, our money is devaluing. You think, oh, it's worth more. You know, I bought a house for X amount of money, and now it's worth, you know, four times as much. That just means the money that you, if you had 300,000, now you need $1,000,003 to buy the same thing. So your money has just devalued.
Absolutely right. And no one better to explain that sort of mechanics within the monetary system than Alistair MacLeod. And he uses gold and silver as the yardstick, or the, what's it called? I can't remember the name.
All right. Well, anyway, then, thank you, Joachim, so much. Say hi to your lovely wife for me.
Will do. Bye, Len. Bye-bye.
Okay. Goodbye.